piles on all of the riches we could ever imagine to do good, to be rich in helping others, to be extravagantly generous. If they do that, they'll build a treasury that will last, gaining life that is truly life. As I strive to live this way, I've adopted some guidelines that I try to practice daily to become a better servant leader. I don't rely on my position or title. I'm grateful for the accomplishments I've made, but I don't rely on them to help me lead. I work to earn respect every day by delivering on what I promise and by serving others. I choose to believe in people and their potential. I care about people because it's the right thing to do. But there are also practical reasons for believing in people. I found that the more I believe in people's potential and the more I serve them, the more their potential increases. That creates a win for everyone. I try to see things from the perspective of others. It's possible to lead and serve others well only when you know their minds and hearts. I intentionally connect with people and try to see from their point of view to serve them better. I work to create an environment of encouragement. Few things are better than being on a team of people who desire to serve one another. When leaders are willing to serve people and encourage others to serve, a spirit of cooperation emerges where it's one for all and all for one. That makes the environment positive and develops a sense of loyalty among team members. I measure my success by how much value I add to others. When you decide to serve others as a leader, the team's success becomes your success. I remember when I experienced that change in thinking. It felt as though my world immediately expanded. It is true. One is too small of a number to achieve greatness. Few things surpass helping your team to win together. I'm still not where I would like to be when it comes to serving people, but I'm continually striving to get better at it. The power of serving others. My desire to serve people comes out of my faith, but you don't need faith to want to serve others. The attitude, priority, and practice of serving others just makes good business sense and is accessible to anyone. Organizational consultant S. Chris Emmons defines servant leadership as a person's dedication to helping others be their best selves at home, work, and in their community. Anyone can serve and lead from any position or role in a family, workplace, or community. If you look at the words of many highly admired leaders, you can see the theme of serving others in their attitudes toward leadership. Here are a few examples. George Washington. Every post is honorable in which a man can serve his country. Benjamin Franklin said, "No one is useless in this world who lightens the burden of it for someone else." Mahatma Gandhi, he said, "The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others." And the words of Albert Schweitzer, "I don't know what your destiny will be, but one thing I do know, the only ones among you who will be really happy are those who have sought and found how to serve." Martin Luther King Jr., "Everybody can be great because everybody can serve." Nelson Mandela, "I stand here before you not as a prophet, but as a humble servant of you, the people. All these people have one thing in common. They were transformational in their own lives, and the lives they touched were beautifully changed. Their values transferred to others. Their work of service not only helped others, but became models of others to emulate. As the saying goes, they were concerned with teaching people how to fish, not just giving them a fish. They wanted to encourage autonomy among the people and create prosperity for future generations through lasting change, not cultivate people's dependence based on their service to their leader." Anne McGee Cooper and Dwayne Trammell have an interesting perspective on this subject. They believe that leaders have been positioned as heroes in organizations and in our culture. Instead, they believe leaders need to shift from heroes to servants. In an article titled "From Hero as Leader to Servant as Leader," they wrote, The true heroes of the new millennium will be servant leaders, quietly working out of the spotlight to transform our world. How should they do that? They list five things. Servant leaders should listen without judgment, be authentic, build community, share power, and develop people. Questions to help you serve people better. It is my great desire for you to develop into a leader who serves people every day. To help you do that, I want to offer you some questions you can ask yourself that will help you. The adding value question. What can I do for people to help them succeed? Helen Keller observed, "Alone we can do so little, together we can do so much." Because servant leaders define others' success as their success, they focus on helping others succeed. One of the best ways to do that is by adding value to people. As I write these words, there are four calls on my schedule that I will make later today. Two are calls to people I am mentoring. I anticipate that they will be asking me to give them guidance on some leadership issues. I will do my very best to help them navigate their challenges effectively. Two other calls are with leaders of two companies for whom I will soon be speaking. These pre-calls have been planned so that I can discover how I can best serve my host when I speak to their people. I do calls like this before every speaking engagement, and I ask a lot of questions such as, "Do you have a theme for your conference? What are your expectations of me? What things do you want me to say that will help you the most? Beyond speaking, is there anything else that I can do for you?" My assistant, Linda Eggers, always joins me on these calls and takes detailed notes so we don't miss anything. Only after asking these and other questions and listening to their answers do I share ways I think I will be able to help them, and I always verify with them that I'm on the right track. Why do I go to all of this trouble? My rule is simple: to speak and serve. I have observed too many speakers who have only a few canned speeches that they use with every audience, no matter what that audience may need or want. My desire is to serve my host and my audience. I'll develop a speech to fit their specific agenda because I know it's not about me. The question I'm asking at the end of my time with them is, "Did I help you?" I agree with the perspective of Tom Peters, who said, "Organizations exist to serve. Period. Leaders live to serve. Period." One of the best servant leaders I know is Mark Cole, the CEO of my companies. He's the best second person I've ever worked with. When we began our journey together, he asked me how he could best serve me. My answer was simple: stay close to me and represent me well to my companies. This request aligns with the proximity principle that I teach and follow. Those closest to the leader find the most opportunities to serve that leader. Mark usually travels with me so we can continually talk about the companies. But when we are not together physically, we are still close together. Mark makes himself available to me 24/7. So does my assistant, Linda Eggers, who has been with me for more than 30 years. And they both do it with joy. Their agenda is to fulfill my agenda. As Mark serves me, I also serve him. My answer to the question, "What can I do for him to help him succeed?" is to give him my time. I mentor Mark. I make sure he has the resources he needs to do his work, and I actively seek opportunities for him to grow. Currently, I'm helping him work on his public speaking. Number two, the everyday question. What do people need from me daily that they may not want to ask for? The best servant leaders anticipate what their people need from them. They are proactive in helping the people they lead. Too many leaders have the attitude, if they need something, let them ask. My door is always open. Here's a thought. Instead of leaving the door open, go out of the door to where your people are and look for what they need. Then give it to them before they even ask. You can't assume that others have the same desires and expectations as you do. I greatly admire Pope Francis. It was my privilege to meet him and observe his servant leadership in action for a few hours. Recently, I read a message he gave to the deacons of his church in which he said, "How do we become good and faithful servants? As a first step, we are asked to be available. A servant daily learns detachment from doing everything his own way and living his life as he would. Each morning, he trains himself to be generous with his life and to realize that the rest of the day will not be his own, but given over to others. One who serves cannot hoard his free time. He has to give up the idea of being the master of his day. He knows that his time is not his own, but a gift from God, which is then offered back to him. Only in this way will it bear fruit. One who serves is not a slave to his own agenda, but ever ready to deal with the unexpected, ever available to his brothers and sisters, and even open to God's constant surprises. A servant knows how to open the doors of his time and inner space for those around him, including those who knock on those doors at odd hours, even if that entails setting aside something he likes to do or giving up some well-deserved rest. Dear deacons, if you show that you are available to others, your ministry will not be self-serving, but will be evangelistically fruitful." That's great advice for all leaders, not just faith-based ones. Serving others begins with the attitude and then becomes action. If you ask yourself what others need and act on your findings every day, serving others will soon become a habit. I love a song that was written by my friends the Goats. They are a family of singers who have servants' hearts. When my son Joel was a teenager going through a rough patch, they took him on tour with them as part of their tech crew. It gave him a chance to spread his wings and to develop his talents and skills. They also loved him and invested in him. The song the Goats wrote is called "Follow Me." Here's what it says. "I want to be someone who makes things better, someone who helps you reach the very top. Never holding back, doing more than is asked, I'm going to give it everything I've got. Follow me, I'm right behind you. Let me help you lift the load. Let me make your burdens lighter as we're heading down this road. I believe in what you're doing. Let me help you see it through. I'll do everything I can to make your dreams come true. Follow me. I'm right behind you. I will seek to answer problems with solutions, and I will give my strongest effort every day. In trouble and trial, I'll go the extra mile. We will reach the goal no matter what it takes. Never making excuses, putting it all on the line, willing to do what others won't, doing more than what is expected, even when it isn't my job. The goal is more important than the role." Those lyrics capture the mindset of people who give what others need, even when they may not be willing to ask. As leaders, that's how we should think. Number three is the improvement question. What can I work on that will help me serve people better? Servant leadership is all about the person you serve. To grow in effectiveness, you must value what is valuable to that person. It is not enough to just get better. We must get better in the areas that are important to the ones we serve. As a leader, do you possess what your team members need specifically in the areas that can benefit your people? More than 20 years ago, Charlie Wetzel came alongside of me to help me with my writing load. Charlie could write, but he didn't really know me well. The first thing I did was give him a set of 100 of my lessons on cassette so that he could start to understand my speaking style. But I knew that wasn't enough. I needed to be proactive in serving him so that he could serve me and my organizations. One of the things I did was give Charlie a book of quotes and ask him to mark what he considered the best ones. After he did that, I looked through the same book and marked the quotes that I thought were the best. Then we compared our choices. In the beginning, 90% of our choices didn't match, so I explained why I liked the quotes that I picked so that he could understand my thinking. Then we did the exercise again and again. After doing this a few times, our choices matched 90% of the time. If I hadn't taken responsibility for trying to help Charlie, it would have made his job much more difficult. To bring out the best in others, I first have to bring out the best in me. I cannot give what I do not have, and neither can you. And here's the good news. Your self-respect will become strengthened as you become better. The wins you experience on the outside with your team will be the result of the victories you first experience on the inside. Each step of improvement will allow you to feel good about yourself and your journey. As my friend Mark Cole says, a servant's leader value rests in why he does what he does and how well he does it, not in what he does or how often he does it. This allows him to find value in who he is. As a servant leader, when you improve yourself in areas that are important to the people you lead, not only do you get better, but you make the person you serve better. That compounds your and their effectiveness, and it has a high return both personally and organizationally. Number four is the evaluation question. How will I know that I am serving people well? One of the lessons I teach in the Leadership Handbook is this. To see how the leader is doing, look at the people. Often the answer to how well the leader is doing is clear to outside observers. But how do the leaders themselves discover the answer? How do they know whether they are serving their people well? Yesterday I invested an hour in mentoring a young leader who has great potential. One of the things he asked me was, what are the essentials that I need to know and do as I begin to establish my leadership? My answer has two words, questions and expectations. My advice to him also helps leaders know how they are serving their people. It is essential to ask questions as a leader. How else will you know where your people are mentally and emotionally? How else will you know what they want and need? How else will you know how to lead them? As a young leader, I used to give direction and then ask questions. The questions were mostly to verify that people understood my direction. Today, I ask questions first, before I even try to give direction. Setting expectations is also essential. In my younger years, I would try to sneak expectations into the dialogue with my team members, give them a little bit of time, hoping that over time they would get it so that I wouldn't have to be too direct. Too many times they never did understand what I wanted. That frustrated both of us. Today, I set up expectations at the beginning of any endeavor. This gives clarity to the entire team. I also ask to know the expectations of the people I'm leading. I need to know what a win looks like to them. I've talked a lot about Mark Cole, my CEO, because he is such a wonderful servant leader. He serves me well and serves the people in the organizations he leads. In fact, he goes above and beyond and always works hard to exceed my expectations. He delivers and then some. While I was preparing to write this chapter, I asked Mark, how is it that you consistently exceed expectations for the team? His answer was very revealing. He said there are five things that he continually does. First, Mark said, he stays close to me so he can know what I'm thinking. This allows him to communicate my vision to the team. Secondly, he checks with me to make certain that he is on the right track serving the companies. Thirdly, he asks himself, how can I exceed expectations for our clients and the team? Fourthly, he continually asks the team how they believe they can exceed client expectations. And number five, he takes personal responsibility for delivering what others need and then some. Mark tells me that I have a higher belief in him than he does in himself, which helps to fuel him. I feel that's the least I can do to serve him. And as a leader, I want him to transfer that belief to the people he leads. If you had to give yourself a report card on how you're serving your people, how would you score yourself? Do you know what your people's expectations are of you, and are you sharing your expectations clearly with them? Are you asking your people questions so that they can tell you what you're doing well and where you could improve? If you're not evaluating your performance in serving them, you're probably not doing it as well as you could be. Number five is the blind spot question. What is it like for the people who work with me? This question is my favorite because it has helped me the most. We all have blind spots, things that we don't see about ourselves. I don't always see myself as others see me, and I don't always see things as others do. I'm certain those things are also true for you. If you have leadership responsibilities, your blind spots are compounded. Because leaders have power and authority, the people around them are often intimidated and think they cannot be open and honest with them. And the higher you are in leadership, the more difficult it is to get a true read on what's happening around you. People often tell leaders what they want to hear, not what they need to hear. So that means as a leader, you have personal blind spots, plus you don't always receive honest feedback from the people who know your faults. How can this challenge be overcome? As a leader, I make two assumptions. First, I assume I have blind spots that hurt me, and second, I recognize that others could be intimidated and may not always be willing to help me with them. Therefore, I ask this question. What is it like to be on the other side of the table from me? The answers I discover are not always comfortable, but if I maintain a good attitude, they can help me to be self-correcting. Here are some examples of what I know about myself. I always think things can be done more quickly than they actually can, and I don't appreciate the struggles most people deal with. I too often assume people instantly understand my vision and will line up with it. I'm impatient. Well, that's short and to the point. I believe everyone is capable of doing what I do if they're willing to put in the effort. I move on from difficulties quickly and expect others to do the same at my speed. Well, I could go on and on, but I don't want to bore you. You get the idea. To try to overcome my many blind spots, I'm always asking, what am I missing? And can you help me? I have given the people around me permission to speak truth into my life. It is the only way I can be protected from my blind spots. Another question I am continually asking myself is, am I working to serve the people around me, or am I just doing this for my own personal gain? The honest answer should be both. However, if my own personal gain continually outweighs serving others, there is a problem with my leadership. I've lost the heart of leading others, and I have to remind myself that if I put serving others first, then personal gain will usually come on the heels of it automatically. Recently, I read some great advice that helps me stay grounded as a servant leader. It came from Dan Price, the founder and CEO of Gravity Payments, a credit card processing company that supports independent business. Price wrote that to become servant leaders, people should do the following. Number one, instead of spending your time defining expectations for your team, spend it identifying how you can support them. Number two, have your team keep an eye on your actions rather than the other way around. Number three, ask for feedback rather than telling your team what to do. Number four, resist the urge to accumulate power. Focus on giving it away. What is it like for people who sit on the other side of the table or the desk from you? Have you thought about that? Too often we assume it's easy. Often it's not. The stronger your leadership and your personality, the more difficult it is for others to work with you. Cultivate a servant's heart, and you help to diminish that difficulty for the people that you lead. Number six, the respect question. How can I gain value while adding value to others by serving? Many years ago, I read Bringing Out the Best in People by Alan Loy McGinnis. It was a book that I would read and reread because I found the message so impacting. The statement that made the greatest lasting impression on me was, "There is no more noble occupation in the world than to assist another human being, to help someone else succeed." In 1995, when I resigned my prestigious position as the senior pastor of Skyline Church, I did so because I was making an intentional transition. I had developed leaders in my congregations for 20 years, but I had started to wonder what would happen if I spent all of my time serving leaders all over the country. What if I spent my time helping others reach new levels of success instead of just being successful myself? I made the change, and I didn't look back. Now, more than 20 years later, I can tell you without a doubt, it's more fun helping others win than winning yourself. Marianne Williamson was right when she said, success means we go to sleep at night knowing that our talents and abilities were used in a way that served others. I now find great value in adding value to others. Serving others purifies our motives. Doing things well for the right reason gives value to us. So every time I add value, I gain value. As Dieter F. Uhrdorf said, as we lose ourselves in the service of others, we discover our own lives and our own happiness. Number 7 is the giftedness question. What do I do best that allows me to serve people best? As leaders, we serve others best in the areas where we are most gifted. As I look back on my life, I can see that the best leaders I had used their gifts to bring out the best in me. That started with my father. Not only did he use his gift of encouragement to inspire me and give me confidence, he also used his relational connections to introduce me to influential leaders and equip me for leadership. Another person who helped me was my mentor, Tom Phillippe. When I was in my early 30s and had an opportunity to make a career transition, Tom, who was a fantastic businessman, took over my little fledgling business to keep it from dying until I once again had enough time to take it back. Tom and my father are just two of many leaders who use their best gifts to serve me. I've tried to do the same for others. My greatest gifts are in speaking, writing, and mentoring. Not only does my speaking serve the people I teach, but it also helps my companies by connecting me to other leaders and organizations. And I've made it a regular practice to mentor up-and-coming leaders. An hour or two with a high-potential leader a couple of times a year can help them answer critical leadership questions and assist them in navigating issues where I have some experience. Think about what you do best that will allow you to serve others best, and use these questions to help you. What are my strengths? How can I use them to serve others? What is my background? How can I use it to serve others? What are my experiences? How can I use them to serve others? What are my opportunities? Again, how can I use them to serve others? What do I love? How can I use it to serve others? Where am I growing? How can I use that to serve others? The leaders who work with me are striving to serve others with their best gifts. Mark Cole is good with people, so he spends most of his time there. Paul Martinelli, the president of the John Maxwell team, my organization that trains speakers and coaches, is best at strategic production, so he serves others by figuring out how to continually grow and improve the organization. Meredith Sims has a fantastic mind for marketing, so she is helping my organizations connect with people so that they can have access to resources they need. Whatever you do best is what you should use to serve other people the most. Number 8 is the example question. How can I serve people in a way that will inspire them to serve others? Recently, I hosted a meeting at the Breakers Resort in Palm Beach. It's a beautiful facility, and the service is excellent. While I was there, I struck up a conversation with Executive Vice President and Chief Sales and Marketing Officer David Burke. And he told me about the organization's focus on service. Servant leadership is at the core of everything we do here at the Breakers, he said. Every new team member goes through a 2-day orientation prior to beginning their normal duties. During half of the final day of the orientation process, the new hire accompanies a senior executive to go out and to perform 4 to 5 hours of community service at one of the many organizations around the county, Urban Youth Impact, Homeless Coalition, Food Bank, The Lord's Place, ARC, and so on. He said, we serve not only our guests, but we serve others that are in the community. We pay our employees to go out on their days off to perform community service. David said he believes that what they do for the community is their legacy and more important than financial results. I love that. And I love that their senior executives lead the charge as they serve people. As a leader, I'm always very conscious of the example I set for everyone I lead and serve, and that often prompts me to be more open and vulnerable than I otherwise might be. When I was getting ready to turn 60, I spent some time thinking about who I wanted to be as I entered into what I felt was a new stage of life. So after spending some time with God, I wrote a prayer to Him about who I hoped He would help me become. I'm very aware of my shortcomings, and I wanted God's help to please Him and to become more like Jesus, who was not above serving others, even doing the menial task of washing His disciples' feet. I wrote the prayer for myself, but I quickly felt prompted to share it with others, even though it reveals some of my personal struggles. And I share it with you now and hope that it helps you. My prayer 60 was this. Lord, as I grow older, I would like to be known as available rather than a hard worker, compassionate more than competent, content not driven, generous instead of rich, gentle over being powerful, listener more than a great communicator, loving versus quick or bright, reliable not famous, sacrificial instead of successful, self-controlled rather than excited, thoughtful more than gifted. I want to be a foot washer. More than 10 years have passed since I wrote that prayer. I'm now in my 70s, and I'm still working to become the servant I desire to be. I have a long way to go, but I am giving it my all. Why you lead and the way you lead are important. They define you, your leadership, and ultimately, your contribution. By humbling yourself and stepping down from your position, and by making service to others a core part of your leadership values, you ironically raise your game, because you help and empower others. Perhaps that's why Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu wrote, "The highest type of ruler is one whose existence the people are barely aware. The sage is self-effacing and scanty of words. When his task is accomplished and the things have been completed, all the people say, we ourselves have achieved it." Developing the servant within you. To become a leader who serves others, you need to focus on making changes in two areas. First, develop the heart of a servant leader. Servant leadership develops from the inside out. People can sense your attitude toward them. They can tell if you look down on them or want to raise them up. They know if you want to help them or hinder them in order to help yourself. They sense whether you are a ladder climber or a ladder builder. That's why serving others has to begin in your heart. Do you genuinely care about people and want to help them be at their best? Do you want others to succeed at least as much as you want to succeed yourself? Most of us are selfish, me included. We each have to work on developing a servant's heart. If you need help with this process, you may want to try doing the things I mentioned in the chapter. 1, don't rely on your position or title. How much you change, how much you lead to meet people on common ground instead of relying on position. 2, believe in people and their potential. How can you encourage the success of people around you, even those that you don't care for? 4, believe in people and their potential. How can you encourage the success of people around you, even those you don't like? 3, see things from the perspective of others. How can you connect with someone who rubs you the wrong way or leaves you cold to learn his or her perspective? 4, create an environment of encouragement. What positive things can you say every day to the people on your team to motivate and inspire them? 5, measure your success by how much value you add to others. What must you change so that you measure the success of your day by how others succeed? Start with these changes and see how much your attitude improves. Also, develop the hands of a servant. A change of heart is like gratitude. If it is unexpressed, it has little value. As you seek to develop the heart of a servant, be sure to follow through with the actions of a servant. Wake up every morning thinking about how you can help the members of your team succeed. personally, professionally, developmentally, relationally, and so forth. If you make them better or more successful in any way, you're on the right check. Chapter 8, The Indispensable Quality of Leadership, Vision. Vision is the indispensable quality of leadership. Without it, a team's energy ebbs. People begin to miss deadlines, team members' personal agendas begin to dominate, production falls, and eventually, team members scatter. With it, the team's energy surges, people meet their deadlines, personal agendas fade into the background, production increases, and the people working together become a thriving team. As my friend Andy Stanley said, vision gives significance to the otherwise meaningless details of our lives. Too many times, the routines of life begin to feel like shoveling dirt. But take those same routines, those same responsibilities, and view them through the lens of vision, and everything looks different. Vision brings your world into focus. Vision brings order into chaos. And a clear vision enables you to see everything differently. Clear vision does wonders for a team, but it also does wonders for a leader. Among its greatest benefits are direction and passion. For leaders, vision sets direction for their lives. It's like having a roadmap. It prioritizes both action and values, helping leaders remain focused. And it creates passion. It lights a fire within leaders that can spread to others. As my friend Bill Hybels has said, vision is a picture of the future that produces passion. There is no such thing as an emotionless vision. Perhaps that's why Helen Keller, when asked what would be worse than being born blind, answered, to have sight without vision. Vision statements. All leaders have one thing in common. They see more and before others. What makes that indispensable is that it allows their followers to begin expanding their vision and acting on it more quickly. If the leader doesn't see the vision, the people never will. Why is the vision so important for a leader? Why must you be able to see what others can't? There are many reasons. Number one, what you can see determines what you can be. I have often wondered about whether the vision makes the leader or the leader makes the vision. After years of thinking about this and observing leaders, I believe the vision comes first. I've known many leaders who lost the vision and accordingly lost their power to lead. People do what people see. That is the greatest motivational principle in the world. In other words, people depend on the leader for visual stimulation and direction. And when it comes to vision, I believe there are four kinds of people that leaders encounter. People who never see it. They are wonders. People who see it but never pursue it on their own. They are followers. People who see it and pursue it. They are achievers. People who see it, pursue it, and help others see and pursue it. Now they are leaders. The vast majority of people fall into the first two categories. They do not pursue a dream on their own, and those who are willing to follow don't go after the dream directly. They follow leaders who possess a dream and who have the ability to communicate it effectively. And that's why it's so important for a leader to nurture a dream or a vision and take responsibility for it. Only when that happens can the vision grow and the leader attract a following. Couple a vision with a leader's willingness to implement that dream, and a movement begins. When I was a teenager, I read As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. It had a major impact on me and helped me begin awakening the leader within me. Allen said, "The dreamers are the saviors of the world." That really stirred my desire to dream big, and I began to wonder how I could help others in a big way. I came away from reading Allen's book with two great lessons. First, I needed to cherish my ideals. Allen wrote, "Cherish your vision. Cherish your ideals. Cherish the music that stirs in your heart, the beauty that forms in your mind, the loveliness that drapes your purest thoughts. For out of them will grow all delightful conditions, all heavenly environment. Of these, if you remain true to them, your world will at last be built. Second, I needed to mine for the gold. Allen wrote, "Only by much searching and mining are gold and diamonds obtained, and man can find every truth connected with his being if he will dig deep into the mine of his soul." The vision we embrace as leaders comes from within us, from our best thoughts, our noblest ideals, but we have to work to bring them to the surface. Having vision as a leader is my responsibility. Number two, you see only what you are prepared to see. German statesman Konrad Adenauer said, "We all live under the same sky, but we don't all have the same horizon." Everyone has the potential to possess vision, but not everyone does. And that's a function of their perspective. In A Savior for All Seasons, William Barker relates the story of a bishop from the East Coast who paid a visit to a small Midwestern religious college around the beginning of the 20th century. He stayed at the home of the college president, who also served as the college professor of physics and chemistry. After dinner, the bishop mentioned that he thought just about everything in nature had been discovered and all inventions had been conceived. The college president politely disagreed and said that he felt there would be many more discoveries. And when the bishop challenged the president to name just one such invention, the president replied he was certain that within 50 years, men would be able to fly. "Nonsense," replied the bishop. "Only angels are intended to fly." That bishop's name was Milton Wright, and he had two boys at home, Orville and Wilbur, who would prove to have a greater vision than their father. The father and his sons both lived under the same sky, but they didn't have the same horizon. If we want to possess a vision for our leadership, we need to prepare for it. We need to anticipate it. When we possess positive anticipation and are excited about what's ahead, we're highly motivated, and we prepare diligently. When we do this consistently, our sense of anticipation becomes the catalyst for our inspiration. Number three, what you see is what you get. The third thing you need to know about vision, in addition to knowing that what you see determines what you can be and what you see is what you're prepared to see, is that what you receive is largely based upon what you perceive. Leaders understand that they have to believe it to see it, while most people go through life saying, "I have to see it to believe it." A great illustration of this concept is contained in Louis Palau's book, Dream Great Dreams. Palau wrote, "Think about how nice and refreshing it is to taste a cold Coke. Hundreds of millions of people around the world have enjoyed this experience thanks to the vision of Robert Woodruff. During his tenure as president of Coca-Cola, 1923 to 1955, Woodruff boldly declared, 'We will see that every man in uniform gets a bottle of Coca-Cola for 5 cents, wherever he is and whatever the cost.' When World War II had ended, Woodruff stated that before he died, he wanted every person in the world to have tasted Coca-Cola. Robert Woodruff was a man of vision. With careful planning and a lot of persistence, Woodruff and his colleagues reached their generation and around the globe for Coke. When Disney World first opened, Mrs. Walt Disney was asked to speak at the grand opening since Walt had died. She was introduced by a man who said, 'Mrs. Disney, I wish Walt could have seen this.' She stood up and said, 'He did,' and sat down. Walt Disney knew it. Robert Woodruff knew it. Even Flip Wilson knew it. What you see is what you get. As a leader, you must strive to see more and before others do. You need to have aspirations. You must be the opposite of what author Kenneth Hildebrand called the mundane man, whom he described as believing only what he sees, only what is immediate, only what he can put his hands on. He went on to say, "The mundane man lacks depth. He lacks vision. The poorest of all men is not the one without a nickel to his name. He is the fellow without a dream. The mundane man resembles a great ship made for a mighty ocean, but trying to navigate in a mill pond. He has no far port to reach, no lifting horizon, no precious cargo to carry. His hours are absorbed in routine and petty tyrannies. Small wonder if he gets dissatisfied, quarrelsome, and fed up. One of life's greatest tragedies is a person with a 10-12 capacity and only a 2-4 soul. Good leaders don't allow themselves to be dragged down into mundane territory. They set their eyes to the horizon and their hearts on the people. They know that a lot depends on their vision. That's what my friend Pastor Rick Warren, echoing the advice of one of his professors, advises that if you want to know the temperature of your organization, you should put a thermometer in the leader's mouth. Leaders can't take their people farther than they can see. That's why their vision needs to be clear. How to increase your more and before. Author Napoleon Hill said, "Cherish your vision and your dreams, as they are the children of your soul, the blueprints of your ultimate achievements." Good leaders see more and before others, and they work to increase that capacity on an ongoing basis. That may seem like a challenge. Many people believe that either you have it or you don't. I disagree with that. I believe everyone has the capacity to improve in this area. And here's how. 1. Know there is more and before out there. My life has been one of continual vision expansion. Adding value to people was the birth of my vision, and today that vision has taken many forms and has expanded far beyond my initial hopes and dreams. As I reflect, I can think of 2 distinct times when I was tempted to think that there was no more and before in my vision. The first was at the beginning of my career, during the birth of my original dream of growing a church that could help people. My dream was at its most vulnerable at that time. Why? Because the vision was new to me. I had no track record of success in realizing the vision, and I lacked the experience needed to overcome vision challenges before me. In addition, I was susceptible to the opinions of my friends. If they were negative, and many were, I was in danger of dismissing the more and before. I envisioned within me, and I might just dismiss it as unattainable. I wish back then I would have known a quote by Jonas Salk, the developer of polio vaccine. He said, "First people will tell you that you're wrong, and then they will tell you that you're right, but what you're doing really isn't important. Finally, they will admit that you are right and what you are doing is very important, but after all, they knew it all the time." The second time I was tempted to give up on increasing my ability to see more before occurred when I was in my mid-40s. I had established myself professionally in my third church. I had an influential position, and I could have been set for life. I felt as if I were living on the mountaintop. What would I do? Settle in or keep striving? Psychologist Judith Meyerowitz said that something happens to many people at around age 45. They lose the vision of a greater future for themselves. Some people stop working and begin fantasizing instead. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be satisfied with the mountain that I had climbed, and I looked around for a higher mountaintop, and I struck out for it. Today, 2 qualities help me focus on ways to increase my more and more. Creativity and flexibility. Harnessing creativity helps me believe that there is always an answer. That mindset enables me to see things before others do because I expect to. Flexibility reminds me that there is always more than one answer. That mindset enables me to see more than others see. These 2 concepts greatly influence how I see the future. They allow me to think with abundance and not with scarcity. They convince me that there are no hopeless situations, only people who think hopelessly. I encourage you to embrace those 2 qualities and never allow someone else to determine your vision. If they do, chances are they will make it small. 2, develop a process for finding more and before. The law of design in the 15 invaluable laws of growth says, to maximize growth, develop strategies. That concept works as well for vision as it does for personal growth, because strategies are nothing more than systems for obtaining specific results. They are like freeways. They can help you quickly get to where you want to go. In chapter 6, I wrote about the process that Paul Martinelli uses to put attitude into action. Test, fail, learn, improve, and then re-enter. That is also a great process to increase the more and before in your vision. Test. Get out of your comfort zone by sharing your vision. On whom can you test it to see if there is a positive response? Where can you share it that you haven't before? You never know who might benefit from your vision until you test it. Fail. Failure allows you to find out what doesn't work. That's so important. You won't eliminate what doesn't work until you know it doesn't work. Why don't we do that more? Learn. A teachable spirit plus humility fosters the learning experience that is essential for expanding your vision. Improve. As a leader, you need to continually ask yourself, am I getting better? That is the question on every successful person's mind every day. That is the road to improvement. And then re-enter. None of this matters unless you get back into the game. The person who fails and gets right back up may be admired for his tenacity, but that does little good unless he learns, improves, and applies what he learns. Warren Bennis said, leadership is the capacity to translate vision into reality. The process I just outlined will help you do exactly that. Number 3, spend time with people who inspire you to see more and before. In chapter 5, I mentioned that author Jim Collins taught me about the concept that he called HULUC, the idea that people you know make a huge difference in your life. I believe HULUC is the most important luck of all. I can look back on my life and verify what a difference it makes. Back in 1971 as a young pastor, I called the pastors of the 10 largest churches in America and asked them for a 30-minute appointment to ask them questions about their leadership and success. 2 of the 10 said yes, and my HULUC journey began. My conversations with them helped me to see more and before. And those 2 leaders helped me to meet the other 8, who had originally said no. I can point to time after time in my life when I was around people who expanded my vision and made me want to be more than I was. And since meeting those 2 leaders, I have intentionally sought out people and experiences that would stretch my leadership gifts and enlarge my vision. And here's what I've discovered. When I'm with the right people in the right places, I don't spend time. I invest it. This is where I get my greatest ROI. HULUC is 90% intentional and 10% accidental. You just can't hope to meet people who will stretch you. Hope is not a strategy. It is impossible to be around bigger people and not become bigger yourself. These kinds of experiences can change your life. The best way to meet right people is to be asking the right question. Who do you know that I should know? Preparation beforehand and reflection afterwards maximize these experiences. Including members of my team is the best way for us to grow together. Whenever possible, take people with you. The second meeting with the right person is the most important meeting. It indicates that both of you see the value of meeting again, and that perhaps it's the beginning of an ongoing mentoring relationship. Are you actively searching for people who can enlarge you and your vision? Is it one of your top priorities? If it's not, it should be. Number 4, ask questions that will help you increase your more and before. In my book, Good Leaders Ask Great Questions, I wrote that questions are the keys that unlock the doors of opportunity. While in New York City recently, I was asked by an interviewer, what is the greatest difference between your leadership in your 30s and your leadership today? After a moment of reflection, I replied, in my 30s, I gave a lot of direction, Today I ask a lot of questions. When we find our vision, we find our way. However, there is another discovery that is equally important, the people who will join us on the journey to fulfill that vision. Questions allow us to get to know the people when we meet them and whether we should take them on that trip together. Questions also open the door of the exchange of great ideas, which will help to shape and inform your vision. Leading by assumption usually ends up to be a leadership nightmare. The right questions kill wrong assumptions. The more successful the person you meet, the better your questions need to be, and the better answers you will receive. Number 5. Intentionally grow every day to increase your capacity for more and before. Personal growth is my passion because it has continually enlarged my capacity and my vision. Many years ago, when I heard Earl Nightingale say, if a person will spend 1 hour a day every day for 5 years on a certain subject, that person will become an expert on that subject. And I determined to follow his advice in that area of leadership. So for 1 hour a day every day, I studied leadership. For the first 2 years, I kept asking myself, how long will it take? How long will it take? I wanted to arrive as an expert. But then something wonderful happened. I began to experience the joy of personal growth. I could see my progress. Better yet, others would too. That's when I fell in love with the journey of growing. And my question changed from how long will it take to how far can I go? I've been asking myself the same question now for 45 years. I haven't found the answer yet, and I don't think I will. Don't think I want to. I'm still growing, and I love it. Steve Jobs said, if you're working on something exciting that you really care about, you don't have to be pushed. The vision will pull you. He's right. I still feel the pull of personal growth, and it's taking me forward as a leader. In my book, Put Your Dreams to the Test, one of the questions I ask has to do with ownership. Is my dream really my dream? Why? Because you cannot achieve a dream that you do not own. Take a look at the differences that you will experience based on whether you do or do not own your dream. When someone else owns your dream, it will not have the right fit. It will be weight on your shoulders. It will drain your energy. It will put you to sleep. It will take you out of your strength zone. It will be fulfilling to others, and it will require others to make you do it. In contrast, when you own your dream, it will feel good on you. It will provide wings to your spirit. It will fire you up. It will keep you up at night. It will take you out of your comfort zone. It will be fulfilling to you, and it will feel like you were made for it. You will never achieve a dream or vision unless you own it. Furthermore, as a leader, you will not be able to get others to buy into a vision that you do not own. Through the years, one of the most common questions I've been asked at leadership conferences is, how do I get a vision for my organization? When I hear this question, I feel for the leader who asks it, because I know it means the person has been placed in a leadership position yet lacks this indispensable quality of leadership. Until the vision question is answered, the person will be a leader in name only. I hope that you already possess a vision of your own for your dream department or organization. However, if you don't, I want to help you. Although I cannot give you a vision, I can share the process of seeking one for yourself and those around you. And I can help you think through the process of implementing it. First of all, look within you. What do you feel? You cannot borrow someone else's vision. It must come from inside of you. What brings it out is passion. What fires you up? One of the leaders I admire most is Winston Churchill. Whenever I visit London, I go to the Churchill War Rooms, the underground offices where the Prime Minister and other British leaders made their plans for fighting against the Nazis during World War II. Against great odds, Churchill led Great Britain through some of its darkest hours, inspiring millions of people to never, never, never give up. He said, before you can inspire with emotion, you must be swamped with it yourself. Before you can move their tears, your own must flow. To convince them, you must yourself believe. When seeking vision, why is it important to start on the inside? There are three main reasons.